Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
This is Kevin Burke of Rachel's Vineyard. Welcome to Oceans of Mercy. Imagine that you're a teenager with a high school sweetheart that you plan to marry one day soon, and you're in the application process to fulfill your dream of attending the military academy at West Point. Things are looking up, but then the unexpected happens. You learn from your girlfriend, Linda, that she's pregnant, and this changes everything. I want to introduce you to the teenager in that story, Chuck Raymond, now married 40 years to his high school sweetheart, Linda. They have two grown children and 8 grandchildren. I want him to take us back to that period in his youth when he first learned of that pregnancy, and a story that is both a cautionary tale to those that are facing an unexpected pregnancy, but it's also a powerful testament to the great mercy and love of God. Chuck, thanks so much for joining us today on Oceans of Mercy.
Good morning, Kevin. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I think you introduced the story very well. Linda and I were certainly high school sweethearts, and we actually met working at McDonald's hamburgers as teenagers. I was 16 at that time, and a junior in high school, we began dating and became very close. And sometime after, that following summer, when we realized the depth of our love, and we really committed to each other. As you mentioned, I was also excitedly applying for admission to the military academy at West Point. And so that was my dream. We had decided, all right, we're going to stay together. I'm going to go away for 4 years, go to college, and then we get married. Didn't quite happen that way. Unfortunately, we did not, live properly. And one day I had the shocking news from Linda that she was pregnant.
Were you a senior in high school at this point?
I was. By that time, I was exactly. I was a senior in high school. Linda was a freshman in college, and we lived close by each other. I think to describe it as a panic is very, very real. We were scared to death. We did not have any idea what to do. This unplanned pregnancy is also described as a crisis pregnancy, and I feel like that was really the case, because it all of a sudden was introduced to this incredible situation that we didn't have a clue as to how to deal with. Neither one of us were really connected or strong in our faith at that time, although I was in a good family. We lived a lot of good Christian values. We were Catholic, but not really attending Mass on a regular basis. So at that point in time, there was no pro-life, no clergy, no influence at all that might have led us to make a life-affirming choice. Mm-hmm. It was dark, we were afraid, and were really pushed to very quickly make a decision.
How did you experience that pressure, Chuck?
It was panic. The pressure came, with the reality that we had to do something. And sadly to say, candidly, there was very little thought of the actual life that was in her womb. This was in the mid 70s, just a couple years after Roe v. Wade. And it was the common public view was that abortion was a solution to an unplanned pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Linda had some influence from a college, a friend of hers. Once her mother found out, her mother was very, very unsupportive, violent verbally and physically, and basically commanded her that we would have an abortion, and that she wasn't going to be the mother of an unwed pregnant daughter.
So her Linda's mom responded, if I understand it correctly, she was actually physically expressed her anger and disappointment physically as well as verbally?
Yes. Yeah. Most of it was verbal, but there was some physical aspect
that,
as well.
That must have been a terrible thing to be facing a pregnancy and then have that response from your mom.
Yeah, exactly. It was devastating. Your father kind of went along with what mom's influence was.
Chuck, do you know why her mom might have responded that way? Any clues to that in retrospect?
It's hard for me to feel like I'm judging. I think her mom was afraid. I don't think she had any examples kind of bearing the reality of a pregnant daughter. Obviously her grandchild, and didn't any have any positive examples of how to deal with that other than make it go away, try to solve the problem with the abortion.
So in her own way, she was responding out of her own fear.
And just fear for her daughter. Again, it was common knowledge that I was intending, with the blessing of an appointment to West Point to leave. So I was going to leave town, and it was all well and good for her that we had committed to each other, but we weren't engaged. And I think her mom was just fearful that I would go off and our relationship would end, and Linda could be potentially stuck, in their home, with a baby.
Okay, so that clearly wasn't an option for her.
No,
if she's going to stay with her mom and dad, she's abortion.
And unfortunately, when my parents learned of the trauma that was going on, with us, they asked if her parents knew about it, what their thoughts about it were. And once the plan or the idea of an abortion came up, unfortunately, my parents just kind of followed along with that as well. Maybe that's the best thing to do. You hope to go to West Point. You guys are young. We weren't, in anywhere economically in a situation where we could start a family or raise a child.
So everything's moving you towards the abortion decision, it feels like.
And I remember having a feeble thought of, well, we can get married and have the baby. But there wasn't any support at all, Kevin. There wasn't any counterbalance or really an opportunity to think or to pray or to seek some spiritual counsel. And really to be aware of other things that could other solutions that were out there. I think key component is that to be a cadet at West Point, you also cannot be married, and you cannot have any legal dependents. So there was definitely a choice on the table, that if we were to have this child, then that would be meaning that I was choosing a different course of my life. And would not be going to West Point, being a cadet, being an Army officer, and so forth.
And I would think
that I realized there were other potential solutions, but that was how we looked at it from there. And I know my parents looked forward to that as an opportunity for me.
Sure.
And again, I think that all kept us closed-minded, as well as the common parlance, that it wasn't a baby yet. It was cells. It was tissue. And that you were going to have a baby, but it was not a baby right now. So there wasn't any conception of the reality of what's growing in her womb.
You didn't have a sense of the truth that you know now, which is that you were a father already. But at that time, you didn't have that connection or sense.
No, not at all. And not at all. And again, with just the fear and the anxiety and the closeness of it, there was a shame. A deep shame by all six of us, that you have this unwed pregnant girlfriend, and the shame was there. So you didn't talk to anybody. You didn't seek any other counsel. Again, we weren't in a position in our faith where we might have gone to see our priest or we didn't have any examples of unwed, pregnancies that were dealt with in a life-affirming manner.
Okay. So take us to the day of the abortion, we went to the days leading up to it, but definitely take us to that day where you.
One of the ways our mind kind of copes with trauma like this is to block things out. So there's components of that I have kind of crushed and put away. But I remember that it happened very, very quickly. I don't remember a lot of days went by from the time of this discovery and the blow up in the family to when I drove over to Linda's house and we got in their family van, and Linda and her mom and I, her mom driving us to Planned Parenthood to abort our child. I remember it being very solemn, very shameful. You know, there wasn't a lot of talking. You know, I was expected to pay for it. So I had, you know, withdrawn a significant amount of money at that time, you know, from a $1.92 hourly salary at McDonald's, you know, to pay for a several hundred dollar abortion. So we walk in there, you know, immediately I'm asked for money. I pay for it. I remember sitting in a fairly large waiting room with a number of other couples or pregnant, you know, women, young women with mothers or fathers. And it just being very sad, very quiet. Nobody really made eye contact or anything like that. Linda gets called away and she comes back and, you know, she's broken. Yet as well, this bad thing that we needed to do was done. And there was the, I hate to say, a feeling of relief immediately that we had taken care of the problem. And theoretically, we could go back to our regular lives and continue with this life plan that she and I had developed together.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. I've heard that from other men as well, Chuck. I think that sense of the, you mentioned it being a crisis. And as a man, a lot of times when there's a crisis, we go into problem solving mode.
Yeah.
So in one sense, that crisis has been resolved. But you also said something else, because it's like there's a couple things happening at exactly the same time where you have a sense of relief, but that you also see that you described her as broken. So that you saw something had changed in her from going through that experience, even at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there was a change. There was an immediate change in her demeanor, in our relationship. And we didn't have any clue, Kevin, on how to deal with it. So our only response was to just lock it away. We literally didn't bring it up again. You know, we drove back to her house. I got back in my car, went home. We tried to get back to our lives of school and work. And we were so ashamed, so broken by it, that we literally didn't talk about it for years, many, many years. It would come up obliquely every now and then.
Isn't it an amazing thing that this experience, which is such a, you know, profound experience for you both, even on just a secular level, but yet the silence afterwards, the not wanting to go there, it's common, but isn't it striking in a way? Because if it was some other event in your life, you would talk about it.
That's right.
What do you think does that?
You know, I think that in our souls, deeply, we knew that we had done a terrible thing. And even though we couldn't admit it, we, you know, and I forced myself to believe that that choice was a valid decision, that we had done what we needed to do and what the right thing to do. But you're right. If it was really an okay thing, then we could have talked about it. It could have been, you know, just an event or a situation or a problem that was solved. But I knew that it had affected her deeply. And that was like ground that we couldn't really go to. You know, it was a very dark, sad place.
Another part of you was also convicted that maybe a strong part of you was convicted that we did the right thing.
Yeah. It's shameful to think about it now, but
no, that's okay. But I kind of want to get, you know, because it'd be helpful for our viewers, because we're going to have men watching this that may still be in that place of saying, you know, at the time it was really seemed like the best thing to do. And looking back, I'm not sure it wasn't, because they haven't yet connected with that other part of themselves. But
and that's exactly right. You know, that was, it was in January of 1976. And that May is when I graduated from high school and then immediately went into the service. And into my sequence of getting to West Point. So things were moving pretty quickly.
Sure.
And again, we were effectively back on track. So I, you know, deep in my psyche, kind of forced myself to believe that that was okay. This was what needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And we're back on track. We love each other. We're committed to be married. And kind of replaying things that my parents had said, you know, you guys stay together, get married. You can have children later when, you know, when it's the right time.
Right. Very common.
And again, having no counterbalancing spiritual inputs, that's kind of where it was.
I think your experience is also common in the sense that, you know, you were able to put that aside, you were able to bury that experience, and just like with any loss, when you can return to normalcy and have your energies directed in a productive way, it does help you cope for a time. So you were able to achieve one of your dreams, which is you attended military academy. And did you guys marry after the academy? Or?
We did. Yeah. Again, like I said, you can't be married and a cadet. So our dream was, we're going to stay together. And thanks be to God, we did. Mm. It actually turned out to be 5 years because I had to go to a preparatory school because I wasn't quite qualified. So it was 5 years later that we got married. We got married the very day after I graduated. It was wonderful. Again, we had fulfilled the dream. We had the strength of our relationships to stay together and to get to the altar. Very sadly, looking back, we got married in the Catholic Church. The abortion never came up with any of our spiritual direction. We went through a pre-Cana marriage prep course, and it was never thought about or brought up. Again, by that time, it had been so deeply crushed and put away.
Isn't it interesting, Chuck, that the church was, in a sense, unwittingly communicating the same thing? This is a non-issue.
Unwittingly, certainly. Yeah. It wasn't as if they knew were complicit.
Yeah, it's interesting that it wouldn't even be part of the preparation for marriage to say, look, if you've had this experience, et cetera. That's a bit of an aside, but it struck me that, everything was kind of coming together to feed that denial in a sense. And also to you were a young couple just starting out. So you're a young couple and you're married, and again, the issue doesn't come up of the abortion. Do you think that the abortion had an impact on your relationship as a married couple?
Yeah, I really, really do, especially with the benefit of hindsight. Kevin, Linda right away experienced some depression. And it was confusing or clouded by the fact, even back when I was at West Point, that we were separated. Our love of our lives, we were separated from each other. And so that was hard. But there was also a depression that set in. There was a period of time where she became suicidal and was admitted to the hospital for treatment for a couple of weeks. And she remembers yelling out that I'm a murderer, I killed my baby. But it was completely denied in her professional hospital setting.
She was crying out for help at that time.
Exactly.
And somebody help me with this.
It was denied. It was not validated as an issue at all.
How long were you married, Chuck?
She was left with having to cope with that. And I didn't really know how to deal with it myself. Right. We didn't talk about it directly as I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm broken because of the abortion. It was more nuanced than that. I remember early days of being married. We're living on an Army reservation. I'm away a lot at training, and Linda's home alone, trying to get settled into being a young officer's wife, and is having a difficult time. Being depressed, just having trouble, getting connected to a different world. And again, over the years, we realized that silence, that inability to communicate about this very terrible, tender event, manifested itself in our relationship. We couldn't talk about any conflict. We avoided conflict and we didn't talk about issues, the things that came up. And so that really, over time, brewed and became layers of bitterness and resentment that literally broke our marriage. And we functioned, very broken for 10, 15 years, I'll bet.
When she was experiencing that depression, did you have a sense that it might have been related to were you able to allow yourself to kind of think about that, or did you just kind of keep moving?
I really did, Kevin. Again, I was, pretty emotionally naive. And didn't have any other input. I struggled with it, struggled with trying to help her, as a supportive husband. And in a sense, I thought bringing up or talking about the abortion would just make it worse. It would just bring her down, to bring that up. So
that's a really important point.
Untouchable.
Very important point.
But I think we both knew it was there. God blessed us with a child a couple years after we were married. Linda describes very difficult times connecting with the child, feeling absolutely unworthy, being a very overprotective parent because, you know, she was not feeling like she was worthy to have been gifted or blessed with a child and being responsible for it.
That's great. So it was very painful.
Yeah, it was very painful. When she also had a miscarriage kind of late in a pregnancy at about 16 weeks, I think, after our son was born. And for her, that immediately brought up the trauma of the abortion in a very, very direct and deep way. She mentioned it at that time. But I was just like, I didn't know how to touch or connect to that other than to try to cover it up and say, move on. You know, that's, you know, we have our baby, our other baby and so forth. Mm. So that was probably one of the first times that it might've openly come up, you know, which was probably 6 or 7 years later.
When you lost that your son or daughter to miscarriage, you said about 16 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Was that something you experienced as a loss as well?
I did. And it was troubling. It was troubling because I remember after she actually miscarried the baby into the toilet, you know, it's a good sized, you know, fetus by that time. And yes. Then had to go to the hospital and they had to do a D&C. I was in the room with her. I remember, again, this is a subconscious thing, but I remember feeling faint, like I was fainting. So I had to collapse to the floor against the wall at the time when this was happening. I don't know how to really connect to that other than to think that was some sort of a flashback to what had happened to Linda, you know, the same kind of procedure, you know, when she aborted our child. Again, it was pretty oblique because we didn't talk about it. It was it's just something that we had to go through together.
Sure. It makes total sense that you would have that kind of reaction in retrospect because it pulls the veil back on that denial.
It did. But I was, again, well-grained with how to shove that you know, veil right back.
Sure.
And I'm also a military officer, so I've got this gung-ho, tough guy, you know, drive on and just deal with any adversity. And so my mentality was to try to, you know, just erase that. And perk Linda up and let's get on with our lives. We're you know, we have good lives. We have our son. And again, just that deeply ingrained mantra of just burying any shred of recognition or guilt or claiming of responsibility for having done something wrong.
Okay. So you're at this point in your marriage and it sounds like to me that, boy, the seeds are there for some real problems as you move ahead.
Yeah.
I'm curious to what the next phase of your relationship was like. And I'm also, you know, very interested in how you were able to come out of this kind of really very strong denial as a couple, and which is very common. I say that with no judgment. It's very, very natural in many ways.
Yeah.
But how was that journey after that
walk? Sure, Kevin. I have to kind of cover a lot of ground pretty quickly.
I know, sorry.
Our marriage was broken. We literally had a blew up. Linda had suitcases on the floor. She was leaving. And you know, by the grace of God, I had the courage to say, no, we're not doing that. We're going to go to counseling. And this was 1997 or 8 or so. So a good 25 years later. You know, again, we felt all the pain and the brokenness without knowing what the core reason was. We went to counseling. A good Christian counselor immediately put us back on our feet in terms of commitment to our marriage. And shortly thereafter, you know, we felt healed enough in our marriage to go to a marriage encounter. A marriage encounter weekend was a tremendous blessing, an incredible wake-up call to me, Kevin, as a Catholic man, a husband, a father, to kind of get out of the ditch and just get your act together. That I've been really, really insufficient in my role, you know, as a Catholic, you know, or a Christian man and husband and father. So I went into a Christian men's group, learned a lot about my faith I never knew before. And what came creeping in was this dark hole. As I'm trying to regain a relationship, or probably really develop one for the first time with Christ, this hole comes out. and I realize that it's there, I am able to go to reconciliation for myself and then start getting a clue that I need to step up and address this with my wounded wife and find a way to get us towards healing. I do remember a astonishing homily. It may have been a Priest for Life priest that was a guest homilist at our parish that talked about Project Rachel, was a counseling program. So very long, traumatic, stressful story, short. I finally had the courage to bring it up to Linda. And she was reluctant. Again, it's by now a multi-decade buried wound that you just don't want to go back to. We went to Project Rachel counseling, which was weekly counseling sessions. It helped, but it was too difficult to do it in 1 hour a week and then go back home, take the babysitter home and take care of the kids and get back to your life. It was just too difficult to bring up the wound. A couple years later, we learned about and we were watching the EWTN coverage of the March for Life in Washington because our son was there. And as they always do, they were advertising and speaking about woundedness and healing. And we learned about the Rachel's Vineyard weekend retreat. And we both remember that tears were streaming down our eyes. I mean, that was definitely a God moment. We realized that we were being called to go to that retreat. And literally within 2 weeks, we drove from St. Louis to Cincinnati, had the absolutely miraculous blessing of experiencing a full weekend retreat where we got to unpack the wound, recognize and affirm the life of our child, name our child, pray for our child, give our child to Jesus, and have reconciliation in the blessed in reconciliation in the sacrament. That I just can't say how much that healed and opened up our lives and really kind of set us forth in the journey of I think the next 15 years from there. Of being free from the shame, the guilt, the burden of realizing what we had done and not having the tools to deal with it in any way at all.
That's powerful. It's powerful to hear how the Lord first restored you as a man and took that manly part of yourself, which is, is part of the strength of being a military man and taking charge when needed. Mm-hmm. And keeping moving and marching forward, and that's a strength when put in the right direction. But he used that to kind of then have you, reestablish your role as to be Christ to your wife in a sense.
Yeah. And Kevin, I in these moments over those 28 years between the abortion and the Rachel's Vineyard weekend, you mentioned the veil. The veil would get pulled back every now and then, and I was faced with an unbelievable shame. And a darkness because, my gosh, that was my child. And I completely had failed as a man and as a father, to have the courage and the strength to do something, to step up, to stop, this momentum, to destroy our child. And I, the reality that I had allowed that to happen, even though I was only 17-year-old curly-headed kid, was very, very painful. Sure. And it took, it took the Lord, it took, the sacraments, it took these retreats to help me to find the pathway to own it and to be forgiven and then to let go, to let God's love and mercy empower me to move forward.
It makes total, why would anyone go there without that, without the help of the Lord's mercy and his ability to pull us out of that pain and out of that realization of our role in the abortion. So it's beautiful to hear how the Lord has worked in your life. Yeah. Now, after not only has the Lord worked to restore you and Linda and your marriage and your family and his great mercy, but he's also called you in different ways. I know you're involved with the Silent No More Awareness campaign. You've spoken many times and shared your story. Could you share a little bit about the other ways that God has used you in your vocation now as a disciple of Jesus?
Yeah. Slowly over those few years afterwards, the Holy Spirit moved us and really called us for me in particular, I was just appalled that abortions were happening exactly in the same way they were you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, even though we had ultrasound and the medical technology. So I was moved to do something, to get active and involved in a great number of different pro-life activities. You know, became the coordinator for our parish's Respect Life Committee. We were running the 40 Days for Life campaigns. And then, again, the Holy Spirit moving in both of us called us to recognize that if we would tell our story, that it was powerful. You know, just to tell of everything we've talked about today could help somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of where we are today, Kevin, is I've had the blessing of being on a number of programs like this, radio shows, speaking at banquets and at youth groups, at conferences, you know, healing retreat programs or healing conferences for men in Ontario. Just a number of opportunities to tell our story, to benefit others, to help any parents, grandparents to recognize the woundedness that can occur when you think you're helping somebody to fix a problem that's a trauma, you know, of a pregnancy at the wrong time.
You're involved in the Rachel's Vineyard outreach in St. Louis, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. We're so thrilled. Again, we had to dash to Cincinnati, you know, in 2003 to go to our retreat. Mm-hmm. But thanks be to God, the timing was right. And last year, that same healing retreat was developed within our archdiocese in St. Louis. And we were asked the both of us to be on the team. And so we are now settling in to do two retreats a year and to be on the team and to be a witness of God's miracles. They're literally miracles to see the transformational journey of women and men who you'll come broken and not knowing what to do with that pain, you know, to emerge, you know, on a journey of healing and freedom. It's just an incredible blessing.
Have you had an opportunity to have grandparents? Because they're an important part of your story is the role, and this is very common, as you know, in many unplanned pregnancies, is mom and dad have an influential role oftentimes, or maybe can't prevent the abortion. Do you have grandparents that attend your retreat as well, or perhaps other family members?
Yeah, you know, Kevin, we're pretty young in our retreat, you know, program. We have not up to this point. Have had very tender conversations with men after different speaking events, in which an older man will come up and let me know of the pain that he's experienced by unwittingly taking his daughter and to an abortion mill to destroy his own grandchild. And there's a very serious wound there, you know, that you know, can be healed. And I know other Rachel's Vineyard retreat programs, you know, have had, you know, the blessing of grandparents, but we know they're out there, or even friends who were involved in the decision. You know, men that come by themselves or men that come to support women, you know, that they weren't involved, that are now married to a woman who's post-abortive, you know, or men that can come by themselves and find that healing.
Yeah, you raise a good point, too, is that, you know, you could marry a woman or she could marry a man who has that abortion in his past before the engagement and marriage. Mm-hmm. And that can have some similar symptoms that could influence the relationship and could be very confusing if you don't really know that abortion could be part of that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we know with the number of abortions that have taken place in our country over the last 45 years, that wound is everywhere. And many times you don't know it, you know, a friend, a spouse, a brother, sister, a colleague, is coping, you know, with a very deep wound that they just don't either recognize or don't know how to deal with it. And the message is that God wants to heal us. He wants our hearts back. And that healing journey is there, you know, for the asking.
If there's a man watching this today and he's, you know, he's kind of on the edge. He's recognizing some of what you're saying in his own life, or maybe in his the life of his son or daughter, but he's not sure, you know, whether he should consider this. Maybe he'll go away from this and forget about it. What would you say to him today? Yeah,
certainly, if they're faithful, you know, involved in church, you know, of any kind, I would Well, I think a good relationship with a pastor or a deacon, you know, might be an avenue to find a friendly force to talk about who's going to be understanding and sympathetic. There's also, you mentioned the Silent No More Awareness Campaign is a tremendous resource. I remember when I was in that phase, I was pretty paranoid of what other people would think and really not able to talk about it publicly. So there's two good websites that have a number of testimonies where men can go and explore, women as well, explore stories of other men that and what their wounds have been, what happened to them, how do they deal with it, how do they find healing. So I would suggest both the Silent No More Awareness Campaign at silentnomore.org or com, you can clarify that, and also rachelsvineyard.org. Rachel's Vineyard is the retreat program I talked about. And there's a tab in there for men, and just a great amount of resources. I know you're involved in that, Kevin, that provide us a way to explore those feelings, to kind of touch into that in the privacy of our own, you know, of our own homes and our own computers.
And if folks want to connect with you and your ministry in St. Louis, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, you can reach me directly. Call my cell phone number is 314-974-6787. Our email address is, I think it's, you know, Kevin, you got to help me here. It's St. Louis at silentnomore.org.
Yeah. You can also, if you go to the Rachel's Vineyard website and you do search for retreats, mm-hmm. you can put in the St. Louis zip code there, and you'll see the St. Louis team, and you'll see contact mm-hmm. information. They'll be able to connect you with Chuck as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Or a lot of churches, a lot of parishes, dioceses have healing contacts through their Respect Life departments. Ours is very, very vibrant and very attentive to a healing journey. So you can find information there, you know, as well. I'm also just real quickly, Kevin, blessed to coordinate, facilitate a men's healing program called Project Joseph. Mm-hmm. So where men can get together, we counsel, we talk, we journey, with scriptural exercises, in a healing journey that's oriented to men. And it's a safe opportunity for men to just be together and to explore all those feelings and the journey.
Oh, thanks for including that, because some men might not be ready to attend a healing program with women for various reasons. But of course, if they attend that, they can also be open to attending a Rachel's Vineyard at some future time, right? Or vice versa.
Yep, absolutely.
That's great. What a beautiful ministry. It's amazing. It's a joy, really, to see. I mean, I'm very sorry for that, for what you went through, for that loss and what you experienced as a young couple. It's very sad to hear that on one hand. The other hand, it's very joyful to hear how God in his great mercy and his love and by the power of his blood, by his cross and resurrection, he has set you both free, not only free as a couple and individually, but free to share the good news of the gospel with others. So God bless you and Linda.
Yeah, it is absolutely astonishing to think, and I mean, it just fits, but to think of what God can do with the trauma, with the incredibly horrific choice that we made. And he can take that to heal it and then use it to give us the mission, to tell the story and for the mercy and healing of others. It's unbelievable.
He really is the Paschal mystery of our lives. We travel with him to Calvary and, we offer our suffering to him, and then he so generously provides the freedom and the mercy that we need. So.
Yep. And then uses it for good. We're very blessed.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks so much, Chuck. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Well, friends, I hope that you will share the good news of this video and information on healing resources. You can go to afterabortion.com. And you will find, you can put your zip code in and you'll find all kinds of groups and healing resources in your area for abortion recovery. So keep praying for us. Pray for all those who have had abortions. Pray that their hearts will be turned to accept the love and mercy and forgiveness of the Lord. And then he'll unleash his great blessing upon you and upon your loved ones. Take care and thank you.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.